It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
There are about 5.8 million drivers in Virginia. And of those 5.8 million, there are 934,000 suspensions. Now, some people could have two suspensions or three suspensions. But if you eliminate the overlaps, you're still down to about 600,000 individuals who are suspended.
Attorney Randy Rollins, president of Drive to Work, explains how it now is easier to obtain installment or deferred payment agreements payable over time and immediately remove a license suspension. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn why kinship guardian assistance is an important tool for keeping families together. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 335, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. When a child is placed in foster care by the court, sometimes a relative is approved to become the foster parent of the child. After the child has been placed in this relative foster home, in some circumstances, if the court determines that the child can never be returned to the parent and the child cannot be adopted, it's possible for that child to either stay in foster care with the relative foster family or for the relative foster family to become the child's permanent legal guardians. For these children, almost always teenagers, the opportunity to have a permanent family can become a reality. But many relatives, though they may wish to become the child's permanent guardian, may hesitate to do so due to the costs. Relatives may have children of their own whose needs they are responsible for, or maybe they are grandparents on a fixed income. A kinship guardian assistance program would allow these relative foster families to receive some funds to help support their relative child when the child leaves foster care and they become their legal guardian. They may need assistance to pay for a larger apartment, for bedroom furniture, or other costs. Unlike in foster care, the relative family would not be entitled to receive the monthly foster care payment. They may receive an amount for fixed costs or a monthly payment to cover ongoing expenses, but never more than what foster care payments would have been. Kinship guardians provide one of the best opportunities for children to thrive when their parents are unable to care for them. In 2016, 71,000 kids in Virginia, or 4% of all children, lived in the care of grandparents. An additional 55,000, or 3%, live in kinship care with other relatives. Only a few families would actually qualify for kin gap payments under federal law. In order to be eligible for kin gap, the child must be related by blood, marriage, or adoption to the foster parent, have been with the relative in foster care for 6 months, and the options of reunification with the birth family or adoption must have been ruled out by the court. The relative also must demonstrate a commitment to permanently care for the child. While many families take in relative children, only those children first in foster care with the kinship guardian and who cannot be adopted would be eligible. Children who come to live with relatives through other pathways would not be. Kin gap provides another means for children to exit the foster care system when adoption is not an option, yet still provide a permanent placement for the child. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. Ain't gonna let no hate. We are here at Drive to Work in the Scott's Edition section of Richmond, and we are speaking with the President and Founder and Chief Executive Officer, Randy Rollins, about Drive to Work, what his organization does, the need for it, and what services they provide. Welcome back to the show, Randy.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be back.
So let's dive right into it, Randy. Tell us what Drive to Work is in general. What is your mission? What do you do?
Drive to Work is a nonprofit organization. It's tax exempt. It's been in business since 2007, and its purpose is to assist low-income and previously incarcerated people to get their driver's licenses back so they can drive to work and get a job. We have found, and this is borne out by many other studies, that not having a license is a significant barrier to getting a job in the first place, and even after you get the job, to keeping the job and advancing. So we see this as a very important work-related workforce development mission.
And how big is the problem in Virginia in terms of drivers who have lost their license for whatever reason, suspended or revoked?
DMV has given us some statistics, and they update them all the time. The ones I have now show that there are about 5.8 million drivers in Virginia. And of those 5.8 million, there are 934,000 suspensions. Now, some people could have two suspensions or three suspensions, but if you eliminate the overlaps, you're still down to about 600,000 individuals who are suspended.
So that's like 1 in 10 drivers in Virginia. What are these suspensions primarily for? Why have they lost their driving privileges?
The number one reason is that they owe court fines and costs. When a person goes to court for a traffic offense or any criminal offense and is convicted, there's always going to be some cost of court, and in some cases, the judge will assess a fine as a part of the punishment. If the person does not pay those obligations within a stated period of time, specifically about 30 days, then their license is suspended, and they can get it unsuspended or restored by either paying it or setting up a payment plan, which is like an installment loan for a car. And that will take the suspension off the driver's record. They can get it back. But about 40% of all suspensions are due to fines.
And if I heard you right, am I correct that those costs and fees can be for any criminal offense, whether it's driving related or not?
That's right. It could be anything. It could be breaking and entering. It could be possession of drugs. It could be for any other crime. And also any traffic infraction.
So how does someone on their own get their driving privileges back if they've had their driving privileges suspended because they owe these monies?
Well, in fact, I'll give you a few statistics here to show you the scope of the problem for an individual. In 2015, we did a study on our files, and our files are fairly unique because they're individual focused, whereas statistics you get from the state are likely to be court focused. So based on our files, the average amount individuals owed was $4,804. The average number of courts they owed it to was 3.6 courts. So it becomes both a financial and a logistical challenge for individuals to deal with these fines. The way to do it is you have to first identify where those fines are, and DMV's got a form that will help you do that. It's called a compliance summary. It will show every fine that is suspending your record and the court that it's from. But it doesn't show how much the fines are, and the fines change, too, because interest accrues on these fines. So over time, the amount you might owe is going to increase by 6% per year. You have to go back to the court or to its collection agency and get the amount and relate it to the fine, to the case that shows up on the compliance summary. And then you have to approach the court or its collection agency, and many of them do have collection agencies, and figure out a way to pay it.
And how would a driver even find out who the collection agency is for a particular court?
He would have to call the court, and he would be given that information. If the court's going to collect it itself, it would tell him to come and pay it. If not, it would say go to, in Richmond, the collection agency for the Richmond court is Parrish and Labar. In Henrico, it's Bellotto. Both are law firms that specialize in collections. So you have to find out who it is, and then you have to get the arrangements to pay it or get on a pay plan.
So this sounds very difficult for a person to do without assistance. Do you find that people are just flat out unable to do it unless they get some type of professional assistance?
It's very difficult, and especially if they have as many as 3.6 or more courts, because dealing with all those different ones is a problem just to get to them. And secondly, before 2017, it seemed like each of the courts had its own rules as far as how to set up these payment plans. For example, one court might say, well, you can set up a payment plan and pay us a down payment of $50. And another might say, no, you got to pay half of the fine as a down payment. So in 2017, both the Virginia Supreme Court and the Virginia General Assembly adopted some legislation and rules to make it more uniform and more reasonable for people to set up these plans.
And would you tell our listening audience, what are those uniform rules that the Supreme Court of Virginia and the Virginia General Assembly enacted?
They said that, for example, the down payment for a first-time payment plan can be no higher than 5% of the total fine. Compare that to a court that was saying they'd like to have half of it, and let's just assume for discussion purposes that the total amount is $2,500. Well, half would be $1,250, and 5% would be $125. So it becomes much more reasonable for more people to get on these payment plans today than it was before that time.
So after they've made that down payment, what are the other uniform rules that the courts have to follow?
For example, there was if you are late in a payment, it used to be that you got suspended immediately for being late because you didn't make the payment on time. Now there's a 10-day grace period. Secondly, it's more flexible as far as the length of time that you have to pay it. If you have a large fine, you're going to have to take more time or have a larger payment, and most people can't come up with a larger payment. Also, it focuses on the financial circumstances of the individual as opposed to just a calculation based on the amount of the fine. So if a person has less financial resources, the courts are to take that into account in setting up the plan.
And so are there any rules or at least guidelines in terms of how long it will take to pay off these fines, or what percent of income should be applied toward these fines?
Really, there's not. And most courts are probably taking a conservative approach and saying, okay, let's try it out for 2 years or maybe even 3 years. But they're not going much beyond that because they want to be sure that item gets paid. And, of course, they've got the opportunity. If you've been regular in making payments but you don't get there within the prescribed time period, you've demonstrated some degree of good faith, and so they're likely to extend it for another period of time. So there's a lot better reception by the courts now to being working with the individual on trying to get these paid.
Well, I'm sure that makes Drive to Work's job a lot easier than it has been in the past. Now, you mentioned some new initiatives that Drive to Work is doing as a result of the Virginia Supreme Court's rules and the Virginia General Assembly's change to the statute. So what are those new initiatives?
One was immediately after the law went into effect July 1, 2017, we took it on ourselves to try to spread the word with the courts and with the pro bono bar and with legal aid about these new rules. So there would be some educational efforts and knowledge gained by them in order to implement it. We published some posters, which I have samples of for people who want to have them, that describe new laws make it easier to pay court fines and get your license back. We also did two webinars and invited participants from the legal aid community and from pro bono lawyers and any others who were interested to participate. It was about an hour long. I think we had about 60 participants in that. So that's one thing we did. We tried to spread the word because it doesn't do anybody any good if these laws just sit there and nobody takes advantage of them. And I think there's been some good effect of that. The second initiative that we did is that we have become a de facto spokesman for Virginia drivers when we're talking to the General Assembly. Members of the General Assembly have seen us there frequently enough and have seen what we've been doing and appreciate it that we are frequently asked to comment on other laws, and we have suggested some other ones too. This year we suggested some. Those particular ones have not met with success so far, but there will be another day for those. And we're always trying to find ways to make the financial suspensions, and by that I mean suspensions for fines, which don't have anything to do with safety on the road. It's just a collection technique, or child support, or civil judgments for uninsured motor vehicle accidents, less onerous on the individual and easier to comply with. We're not trying to make the roads less safe. We're just trying to make it possible for people to get back out on the road and still meet their financial obligations.
Do you find that you can help people pretty much throughout the state of Virginia?
We do. We view ourselves as a statewide service. When it comes to fines and costs, which involves some accounting aspects once you get the plan set up and keeping the individual's contribution toward that, their down payments in the trust account, we centralize that. We don't ask a volunteer attorney to take on that obligation. But if the individual has to go to court to get a restricted license and they live in Galax, well, we find a lawyer out there who can help us with it. If they live in Northern Virginia or someplace which is difficult for us to get to, then we'll find a volunteer for that. So it does help us spread it out. But since so many of the problems are related to fines or judgments or child support, which we can do without involving the individual lawyer until it goes to court, we try to get all that done here and say the volunteer lawyer for the things that they can do, which is to go to court or to make these presentations at the Department of Corrections.
So how does someone become eligible for the services of Drive to Work? What are the eligibility rules?
Being a nonprofit organization, we set up the rule that if a person has an income less than twice the federal poverty level, they are eligible for Drive to Work. So in 2018, an individual who has no dependents can earn on a monthly basis approximately $1,900 a month and qualify. If he goes over that, he doesn't qualify for the Drive to Work program. A person who has three in his family plus himself, family of four, it's about $4,100 a month. So we pick up quite a broad range of individuals, and we do that for a purpose because actually the people who need the license the most are those who are able to work, and some of them have some skills such as being an electrician or a plumber or whatever, and they need to get to the job. And those are the individuals who really do need to have a license because their jobs require them to get to the job, not just go to work.
So is there any cost for the service for people who are eligible, who are under that 200% of poverty?
Yes. We have always taken the view that this is an important opportunity for individuals, and they recognize it, and that they need to have a stake in the process. So we have a schedule of our costs, and so the individual must pay $250, and then if we have to do multiple trips to court for them, the price goes up based on how much effort is required. We tell them all these considerations before they sign up, so when they sign up, they know what they're doing, and we know that they're going to stick with it. So that, in addition to the fact that they've got to come up with their own money to pay these fines, makes it not a inexpensive proposition, but probably much less than it would be, and certainly with the assistance, a more valuable service than they can do it by themselves or go somewhere else and get it done.
So if you had the ideal client coming to Drive to Work, what would you want that ideal client to bring in terms of paperwork?
They would need to bring some form of official ID, like a Virginia ID card. They would need to bring some paycheck stubs if they are working. And if they're independent contractors and working for themselves, what we ask them to do is show us a list of some of their recent jobs so that we know that's a genuine statement. It's not just hopeful thinking on their part. We do not require them to prove exactly what their income is. We just rely on the paycheck stubs to do that, and that way we qualify them. We will not generally turn anybody away. The only time we would even consider that is if we find that they are not going to be able to get their license back because the time period that they have to wait before they can even get it under the law is, say, 2 years away. And then we'll tell them, you know, it doesn't make any sense for you to start this right now, but come back in 2 years when you're going to be eligible to do it.
And so for the people who are eligible to do it, from the time they first contact Drive to Work until the time they at least got that license restored, even if it's a temporary basis, but it's restored, what's the average range of time it takes?
That's a hard question because there's no averages, but I can give you an idea of some examples. There have been some people who've had a relatively simple problem or only one problem, and we've been able to solve it within a couple weeks. But more typically, it's a 6 months process. And mainly it's a 6 months process because they need to come up with resources to pay on these fines, even if it's just a down payment. They've got to come up with that. And before we will submit a pay plan for a court to approve, we want to be sure they have the down payment in our trust account so that there's no doubt in the court's mind that they're going to get at least that if they set up a payment plan. And then there's the normal delays that you have in scheduling with courts and things like that. But if everything goes smoothly and the case is not tremendously complicated, it can get done within 6 months.
And, of course, that's 6 months sooner than it would have if they had not contacted your agency.
Oh, absolutely. And furthermore, many of the individuals have not had a license for 10 years. So they get excited about the possibility of getting it and impatient when it doesn't happen quickly. So we try to remind them, well, you know, it's been 10 years since you even had one, so if it's going to be another 3 months, it's not a big sacrifice to go through that process. The other thing we tell them is that, yes, it does cost you something to do this. Whether you do it with us or whether you do it by yourself, it's still going to cost you something because there's the reinstatement fees, there are the fines and costs if you owe that. There's some filing fees if you got to do certain things. But it's an investment in your future. One illustration is that we did a review of what it would be, what the cost to the state would be if a person was unemployed for a year. And the unemployment payments they would receive on the study we did came to about $14,000. Now, that's not much money to live on, but it's money out of the state's coffers and into somebody's hands so they can live and exist. Compare that to a person who had a license and therefore a job for a full year at a minimal level of starting pay of, say, $10. And that person would earn after taxes about $17,000. So that using that example, we have seen about a $31,000 turnaround in savings that the state had for not having to pay it and income that the individual had right in his own pocket, more than he had if he just stayed on unemployment.
So, Randy, final question. How would an individual get in contact with Drive to Work?
They can call our number, which is 804-358-6727, or our toll-free number, which is 877-358-6727. They can send us an email, info@drivetowork.org. They can find that we are listed on the web under the name www.drivetowork.org. And they can text us, too, if they have a phone, we can receive a text message, and they can get information.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Randy Rollins. He is the founder, president, and chief executive officer of Drive to Work, which helps people who have their license suspended restore their driving privileges. Thank you so much for being on the show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Vocational rehabilitation helps people with disabilities rejoin the workforce. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Shalisha Taylor, disability rights advocate at the Disability Law Center of Virginia, explains the Client Assistance Program, which helps people get vocational rehabilitation services. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrand.